Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life. All right, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman, and I'm sitting here with...
Hello, my name is Thomas McGregor.
Thomas McGregor. And we are at the very end. Actually, this is the last episode we have on the books, even though we decided we're probably going to revisit the series in a series called The Word of Their Testimony.
Get your submissions in.
Do it, man. We're going to open this back up. If you love to share your story, we'll absolutely find a way to make that happen. We did have something else on the books that we're excited to share about next week. But this has been a really great series. Tom, why is it called The Word of Their Testimony? Where does that come from?
It is from Revelation 12:13, where John the Revelator is talking about how disciples of Jesus overcome the world, the devil, the flesh, mm-hmm. etc., by trusting in Jesus' sacrifice, the blood of the Lamb, sharing their Jesus stories, the word of their testimony, and then not being afraid to die, which is sometimes the case and often was the case.
Yeah, I mean,
back in the day,
for who he was writing to, you know, that's the churches there that he talks about in the first two chapters. It's very much the case. It's very much the, hey, death is right in front of you. So. Blood of the Lamb, word of their testimony, and not living your lives to death. And we see that as the pattern and the way which they and then also Jesus in Revelation conquer.
Yeah.
And so part of the way that we're doing that is by talking about what Jesus has done in our lives and the lives of people in our church. And so this is just a chance for us to highlight what God is doing, what Jesus is doing at work. And to that note, we have a very special guest with probably a familiar last name at this point. Very special guest. Who are you?
Hey, my name is Dan Voth.
Hey, Dan.
Glad to be here.
Man, we're glad to have you. We've had, like 4 or 5 of the Voth clan on the podcast so far?
Just about the whole crew.
Just about the whole crew. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We'll just get started on the conversation. Where are you from? We kind of know the answer, but where are you from? How'd you grow up? All that kind of stuff.
So I was born and raised in Woodinville, Washington. Grew up local.
You don't run into a lot of people who grew up local anymore. It seems it's mostly immigrant. It seems.
Yeah.
kind of funny.
As I've gotten older and further away from high school, I run into less and less people that I know. But occasionally at the gym, you know, I'll recognize somebody from my graduating class or whatever. And then still to this day at Imprint, there is at least one individual that I graduated with.
No way.
That's
cool.
Here. Yeah. Grew up here. Have four other family members, mom and dad, brother, sister. We collectively went to church together as I was a kid. North Shore Baptist.
Yeah.
A great place at the time. Basically I was raised in a family to know and love the Lord.
Hmm.
My parents were pretty adamant about our family going to church every Sunday. Getting us into Sunday school, and then throughout the adolescent years, just participating in, Awana, Bible camps.
Awana is Christian Boy Scouts,
basically.
Cub Scouts?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. The whole idea is kind of memorizing Bible verses, doing it, with other kids, and having a lot of activities, but. Bible learning is kind of the basis
core.
There.
Yeah.
That's funny. Activities, a lot of activities is sort of the name of the game in church in the 90s. It's
definitely
kind of funny. Lots of activities, lots of things to do.
I have a lot of fond memories looking back on.
I was going to ask, is that something, looking back, are you grateful for that? Was it something you enjoyed at the time?
I am grateful for it. Definitely enjoyed it at the time. Made some friends through those church activities that, I didn't have, in school. And I think it also kind of instilled at an early age just like the importance of getting into the Word and being in fellowship with other Christians, even though I didn't necessarily understand that
the
time.
I know Awana is all about, scripture memory and that kind of thing. That's how you kind of move. I never did Awana either, which is surprising because I was a Southern Baptist. But yeah, we were too cool for Awana, I think, where I grew up. Okay, cool. So yeah, you're there. You're doing all kinds of stuff in that way. When did Do you remember a point where you were like, you know, I think I'm going to follow Jesus, or was it more of a process where?
I don't remember like the initial moment. You know, my mom told me that when I was really young, like six, that as she was reading through scripture to us kids, like in the evenings, you know, I decided to give my life to Christ.
And okay,
And then since then, you know, into adolescence, I think it was kind of a process.
Yeah,
definitely understood the gospel, you know, who Jesus was, and was all on board for that. Mm-hmm. But I don't really think that I understood it. Understood, you know, what that means for my daily walk with Him until, you know, a few years ago.
Okay. Gotcha.
What happened in kind of the high school range? This is usually a turning point for human beings.
Yeah, definitely.
it's true.
You know, in high school, like I said, I understood who Christ was, and I think I loved Him with all my heart, but there was definitely a large pull from the world, mm-hmm. and to be like the world, and to be different than who I was.
Okay.
And that kind of overpowered everything that I had been brought up to know in Jesus. Yeah. And so it was this like deep-seated desire to you know, be cool or seek approval, you know, from others.
Was acceptance kind of the main driver there?
It could be. You know, acceptance, just wanting to be unique, I guess.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Just kind of go off and do my own thing, and later on in high school, my junior senior year, home life kind of started falling apart a little bit, and then finally, right before I graduated, my parents ended up getting a divorce, and at that time, I had already gotten an acceptance letter to Western. Up in Bellingham for college.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I was just like, man, this is it. Like I'm out. Like, kind of didn't really bother me too much. I was just like, you know, I'm off on my own now and can finally, be the unique different person that I've been wanting to be for a while. I can, go off and experience new things. And that kind of turned into experiencing, new drugs and alcohol and the party scene just really seeking acceptance and approval and you know, whatever else the world had to offer through that. And
sure. And
as soon as I started partaking in alcohol and marijuana especially, it seemed like it fit right away.
Like the community that was surrounded those things.
Yeah, or? Yeah, the community, like definitely felt accepted from that community right away. And because of the obvious effects from those drugs, I was able to loosen up and, it seemed like everything was, becoming easier for me.
Huh. Yeah.
But at the same time, like, almost immediately my freshman year in college, like my grades were slipping. Like I wasn't doing as well as I had been doing, in high school when I was sober and trying, you know, academically.
Yep.
So,
where did like that kind of, I mean, are you up at Western for 4 years?
I was there for five, actually.
Okay.
Victory lap.
Like, yeah. I said, my grades definitely took a hit, so I had to spend some time making up my fifth year.
And where did that like community, like did it stay together and did it like reinforce that stuff for you, or was it kind of more like this broader community that wherever you went, you had a place
to found a
subculture. Be yourself.
Yeah.
The latter.
Yeah.
I think definitely it was more of a broad community. You know, I would search after anybody else who was of the same mindset that I was. And, you know, we'd party together and you know, weeks or months after that, you know, I was kind of with a different friend group doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there definitely are some people who stuck around, and but I think for the most part it was that broader party scene where just looking to fulfill the flesh, really, and anybody else that I met who was of the same mind, you know, we kind of rolled together.
What was going on at home and in your relationship with your family?
At that time, you know, my parents had split up. My brother and sister were still in school. I think they were going back and forth between my dad's place and my mom's place. You know, my dad really did a good job during that divorce. He was the one that left the home and kind of went off and got his own apartment. He did a really good job of still wanting to be involved in all of our lives as much as we wanted him to be. You know, he created a space for us, you know, to host us and tried to get us to come over regularly throughout the week. And you know, by that time I had gone off to college, but when I would come home for vacations and stuff, still made it a point to get the family together.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, by that time, I didn't lose track of what my family was doing at the time, but like I was a lot more focused on what I was doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just felt like something that you left behind, kind of.
Definitely.
Yeah.
What was like the relational dynamic when you'd like enter back into that world?
When I entered back into home life?
Yeah. So like you're up in Bellingham and you don't have to deal with it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But when you enter back in, what's your relationship like with your mom, your dad, your siblings?
I think it was still good. Like I definitely didn't let on to how much I was partying. That was kind of like a separate deal. So I think my relationships on all fronts at that time were still kept up pretty well, especially with my brother. Aaron and I have always been super close. I mean, he would come up to Bellingham and visit me on a regular basis. And, but yeah, for the most part, like there was no tension in any of the relationships yet.
But they also didn't really know who you had become, and were finding acceptance.
Correct. I think right before I left for college, both of my parents had found out, that I had been smoking, you know, at least a little bit. But I don't know that they really understood the extent of my party scene. And I don't know that they necessarily wanted, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. They had some heavy stuff going on themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I grew up as, you know, the oldest of the three children, but also kind of like the good kid. The good kid.
Yeah.
No way. Okay. So was that because you were a good kid and being yourself, or were you like keeping the peace? What was going on?
I was pretty much doing things correctly. I mean, I think that was also part of the looking for approval is looking for approval from mom and dad and wanting to perform well in their eyes. And it wasn't like I was, you know, saying one thing and doing another behind their back. Like I really did try my best to do well. And, not only at home, but in school. And, sorry, what was the question?
Oh yeah. But you felt like there was this aspect of yourself where you felt unique, you felt different, in the midst of that, like,
a good kid thing.
Yeah. Performance and acceptance thing.
Yeah. I think part of that came from in school, my first few years, I was put in a separate program for kids called PACE.
Yeah.
And it was really something not for like special needs or anything like that, but it was something they offered at the time. So I think it was like your parents can be more involved in the classroom or whatever. Mm. Anyway, so I think it was fifth grade. My parents finally took me out of that and put me into the normal classes with other kids and integrating into the normal classes. You know, they looked at me different and treated me differently.
Mm.
And for a few years, you know, was really picked on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, had a lot of really negative self-talk, and I think that may have been partly what fueled the, you know, needing acceptance and approval from.
Was it sort of a black sheep kind of complex? Like, yeah. I don't really fit here, yeah. so let's try to find a place that I do. Yeah.
Being yeah. reinforced by yeah. all of your yeah, peers yeah. who are, like, ruthless piranhas sure. at that age.
it is a hard age.
It's like a lifeboat mentality when you're yeah. in elementary school. Yeah. Like, you're going down or I am. So at this point, you're up at Western, you're kind of coming back and forth, that kind of thing. You're keeping identity in one spot and then in another spot. Basically, they're not interfering with each other at all. What happens next?
So, I mean, everything kind of stayed the same for college, like yeah. Just continue to party. Anyway, finally graduated in 2012 with a degree in geology.
Oh, cool.
Got a job back home, actually, job offer for a geotechnical engineering
Whoa, cool.
firm in Kirkland, and moved back and started working there and really liking what I was doing, but I noticed that my drinking did not stay at college, like it just kept picking up. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I moved back from college, like I didn't have a big old collection of friends, like that was left back at school, you know, at Western, and they weren't even, you know, most of them weren't even true long-term friends anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
smoke together, stay together yep. kind of folks.
So as soon as I moved back for this new job, there was just it felt like a big void. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think that's when my drinking started picking up more to help numb those feelings and fill that void. Really? And so I was actually with this company for 5 years, and did well there for the first few, and the last couple of years really just started to fall apart. Drinking just kept picking up, you know, more excessively. And exponentially, and got to the point where it was really interfering with daily life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was like I couldn't stop. Like, mm-hmm. like I had to drink in the mornings before work. Like I would take alcohol with me in the car and be drinking while driving. It just became a necessity. And at that time, I was living with my brother and dating Lauren, who came on the show earlier. and at the time, you know, we had all kind of partied together for a bit, but as we were getting older, they noticed that like I was going like full bore.
Yeah, going too far
and I think it really bothered them, and so finally the two of them pulled me aside and they were just like, look, like we don't really know what's going on, like we're concerned about you, like we think you should slow down or stop. And
yeah.
And so, I think at that point, like I told them that I would, and that's when like the drinking in secret started, from Lauren and Aaron.
Had you tried to like slow down or taper prior to that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel like I needed to.
Yeah.
Did it feel normal, or did it feel like you were trying to like hiding from something, or did it feel like, just yeah, this is what some people do and it's okay? Or
no, at that point when they confronted me and told me, you know, we think you have a drinking problem, and then I was basically lying about it after that, like I knew that that wasn't normal. So I was able to continue on like that for maybe a few months, and you know, I had been calling out of work pretty much once a week or something like that, coming up with all sorts of excuses, and really it was just hungover or I was already drunk. And finally I think I just broke down in my car one night and was talking with a trusted friend at the time, and she was talking about going to rehab. And and, you know, asking if I could get a hold of HR at work and kind of explain, you know, that I probably need to go away for a little bit so that I could get better and return. And so that's what I decided to do. I checked myself into a 28-day inpatient treatment center in Kirkland, and I didn't really know what that was going to look like. You know, I think at that point I told my parents, and I seem to remember at least my dad being a little bit surprised, like, that I needed to do that. Mm-hmm. Probably because I had been keeping...
You'd been keeping a good secret, yeah.
Yeah, the extent of it to myself, and really only Aaron and Lauren knew at that point. So, yeah, I went to treatment, completed 28 days. And, I mean, the whole time I was there, it was just like, okay, like, we're doing AA now. And like, I understand that, like, I need to stop drinking, but like the desire was definitely still there.
Yeah.
So literally the day that I got out of treatment, I started drinking again.
Man. Okay.
Went right back to it. Yeah. My dad had, organized like this whole, like, get out of treatment barbecue, you know, like, congratulations, like, inviting people over, and like, I didn't even show up to that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Huh.
That sounds terrifying. Like, you've just completed 28 days of sobriety, and now you've got to go interact without any chemical assistance with a bunch of people who are like celebrating stuff, and like, you know that there's still a part that can, you know, like, not come out of dormancy, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't even tell you what was going through my mind at that point. That was years ago. But yeah, probably a scary situation. And I think there was the overpowering desire to just have a little bit more and not let it get out of control. Like, that from here going forward, that was like always the lie that would creep in. It's like, oh,
I can control this now.
I can control it.
Like, I went to rehab. I got this. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Can I got to back up, because so you are like super involved in church up until you go to college. What is your community like in Bellingham, and what's it like when you get back into town?
So Bellingham community is pretty much all partying community.
Okay. So no church?
There's no church. I went to church maybe three or four times my freshman year.
Yeah.
My roommate freshman year was a friend from high school and from North Shore. So he was a Christian.
Yeah.
But, you know, he and I started going like our separate ways partway through freshman year as my partying increased, and he didn't really want to be involved in that like I did. So yeah, not much church at all throughout college. And then once I got out of college, there was really no community, church or not. You know, there was my brother and Lauren for a long time.
You've got a sweet job doing something you love and you're good at.
Yeah.
But you've established a pattern, and like, you've got some family, and that's about it.
That's about it. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of my hobbies and passions that I had, you know, when I was a little bit younger, I used to be really active before college, like hiking and swimming and doing a bunch of stuff outside. Like, drinking just took the place of that, and didn't have the desire to do any of those things anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah, brutal.
So then after the 28-day treatment center, I went back to work. Like I said, started drinking the day I got out, and that just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically over the next several months to a year maybe, I went back to the same 28-day treatment center another time, and also went into a few, like, 3 or 4 day detox centers.
Mm.
Like,
your own volition, or?
Yeah. Like my drinking at that point was, like, I would get the shakes pretty bad. Like, I just like couldn't function. My withdrawal symptoms were pretty severe. And like, I knew, once I got to a certain point, like, I couldn't do this on my own. Like, I need like medical help.
But this wasn't like, people aren't like pushing you to do this. You're just realizing like, I need to.
I think at this point there definitely was pushing, especially from my dad. Like, he was really concerned, and like, after he had realized, like, after a certain point of time, like, I'd been drinking again, he would really try and push me to go back to detox. And I think it would definitely take some convincing. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that I needed to, but I wanted a few more days, to do my thing.
Yep.
So eventually, my employer at this place, like, couldn't put up with it anymore.
Yeah.
And, I mean, rightly so. I just look back and I'm grateful that they allowed me to go to rehab a few times, and put up with my absence, in that regard. But, anyway, so yeah, came back from detox one day after not even telling them that I was going, and had missed a few days of work, and they just cut me loose after that. Mm-hmm. And I think right around the same time, my current apartment lease was ending. So I lost my apartment and my job. And so, I was scared.
Yeah.
And the best thing that I could think of was to just like calm my nerves and shut away those feelings and those fears with more alcohol, mm-hmm. you know?
Man. Yeah.
And your community at this time still is primarily family. Are you like doing AA throughout this, or?
Yeah, on and off.
Yeah.
On and off. AA, you know, I've had some good experiences and some bad experiences. And, you know, I've tried a lot of different meetings. And AA was on and off.
Yep.
And so I had different people in my life reach out to me or to my parents and ask if they could help out. So I think the first one was my mom's aunt who lives in Tacoma, mm-hmm. and she offered up her place. She heard that I was out of my apartment and out of a job, and she said, hey, come live with me if you need to for a little bit. And really not having any other options, I said, okay. And she and I never had like a great relationship throughout my life. You know, she's not my aunt, she's my mom. So there was a little bit of separation there. But I took her up on the opportunity and went and lived with her. Going to AA meetings throughout the day, kind of applying for jobs and sneaking alcohol back into her place in the evenings. And I think, you know, it's kind of the same story over and over again for a couple of years, just continuing to drink, going into treatment, and really feeling desperate, like only calling out to the Lord when, like, I was in the dark pit of drinking calling out for him to like save me from that. And I mean, looking back, he definitely did. He provided, like just within some of the details, like he provided a bed, a detox, like in just the right moment. Like so many times, I think there was one time, I talked to my dad and I had just been out walking with like a bottle in a random neighborhood, and had like passed out in somebody's yard, and he was like driving around trying to find me, and stopped in some parking lot and just like was praying in his car for the Lord to like reveal to him like where I was so that he could come get me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like when he's done praying, he sees this ambulance go like screaming past him, and he's like, maybe I should follow that ambulance. So he does. He literally follows the ambulance, and it brought him right to where I was. And these two police officers were about to like throw me in the back of their car.
Mm.
And he basically got out and was just like, this is my son. You know, can I give him a hug? And if I take him to rehab again, you know, will that prevent him from going to jail? And they,
whoa.
They accepted, so man, got out of bars that time, thanks to my dad and to the Lord.
What's like, you've got some sort of connection to God. You know, like when you're at your worst, mm-hmm. that he can, or at least he's available enough to listen.
Yeah.
Outside of those moments, like what's your conception of like his feelings towards you, or like, yeah, what's the relationship like?
Pretty spotty. I mean, I definitely felt like, I was a letdown, you know, to myself and to him. I knew that, that he forgave me. But I just continually felt like a letdown. So I think the next part of this, is going to live with my godparents in Oregon. They were the next people who offered up their home and said that they had a really good friend who was a pastor, who was interested in meeting me and walking alongside me.
What part of Oregon?
This was Wilsonville.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. They have a house right on the river.
Yeah.
Moved in with them, and started meeting with this guy named Bill. And he took me through the Gospels, on a daily basis. We read them together. You know, if I had questions, he'd go over it with me. And he was the first one to kind of show me, what it's really like to crack open your Bible every day and get to know who Jesus is, and what it's like to walk with him and, to seek after him and just spend time with him, be in prayer. And, it was almost kind of like this light bulb went off, like, or like I had reconnected with something that I had forgotten about long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And just like what a real relationship with Christ looks like. And not only like, explaining that to me, but demonstrating that to me. And that was big. But that didn't really stop my relapses. Ended up having to go back to rehab and left Oregon after that. But Bill opened a door for me, and my relationship with Christ that I hadn't, had before.
What did you see in Bill that was different than what you'd had before, would you say? Like, if you had to put your finger on it, what was it about the way he was or what he kind of pointed you to that made it seem different?
He was just continually like ecstatic about what he was reading in the Gospels, and just about what God was revealing to him day by day through his word. So I think just seeing like his relationship with Christ like become alive in his own eyes, like made it enticing for me, like something that I wanted in my own life. I've got to think for a minute.
Like, no,
you're great.
You wrapped up, you had a relapse, went to rehab in Oregon, and then came back up to Woodinville.
Came back to Woodinville.
You've been through?
No. Okay. So this is where it kind of leaps off into the next chapter. So, leaving Oregon, I'd kind of, struck out three times there, with my godparents, they forgave me for drinking. I took one of their cars one time and was drinking and driving. I didn't get pulled over, but, had been messing up there. And they said, well, you know, maybe it would be, best to look into a long-term treatment center. That's not really what I wanted to do. I was really wanting, if I had to go to treatment, do another 28-day center, because like I can't spend months locked up. Like I have to get back to whatever, which was nothing, literally nothing at that point. But in my mind, it's like, no, like I can't waste that time. Like I gotta get back to life or getting on with my career or whatever. So, Anyway, I didn't really have much of a choice at that point. So I was looking into something called Teen Challenge, which is a 12-month program scattered throughout the the states, I think. And went and visited a couple of them in Oregon before I left there, and just didn't get a good feeling. Mm-hmm. And then at that time, my dad was talking to me, and he reminded me of a place locally here in Bothell that he knew of called the Damascus House, which is a 6-month faith-based program, which, you know, you live there. Anyway, so I ended up going there. I was like, all right, let's do this. At least it'll get me back home, closer to family, closer to Lauren. And it's a little bit shorter time. So enter the Damascus House. I think this was September of 2019. And I show up, didn't really know what I was in for. The program is basically Monday through Friday, we go to work. Different people throughout the community or the church hire the guys from the house out to do whatever it is they need. Lawn care, moving, you know, if they need objects moved, painting,
just kind of handy, whatever,
manual labor. And the house, I think at that time had about 10 guys. And so really like got thrown into a small, tight-knit community of other, for the most part, believing men. Mm-hmm. And we were just doing life together. And then, so work was during the day, and then every evening we'd have a Bible study of some sort, either at the house or hosted by one of the other guys at the church. And the Damascus House came out of Canyon Hills in Bothell. And so immediately, like, I started clicking with some of these guys and getting back into the Word, and reading my Bible on a daily basis, like having a quiet time for the first time in a long time, like every morning before work. And it really set up like a structured life on like how to do things without substances and like and practice that. Like getting into the Word, going to work. We were supposed to once a week make a meal for everybody else in the house. And so it's just like learning how to adult again, basically. And that was pretty big. That was the 6-month program. They allowed us to stay afterwards in a graduate house for a few months after that. So that's what I did.
And this is like, it's not from the sounds of things, because you'd always said you'd had Aaron and you and Lauren, you'd had that. Was this the first time you'd had like a tight-knit community that wasn't family in a while, it sounds like? It wasn't like situational, like we're smoking together, so we'll hang out and, you know, as long as that's good.
We had actual things to talk about, could bond, you know, made some great relationships that I still have today from that program. So while I was in there, one of the jobs that I would do every Monday is go out to a local Boar's Head distributing company in Woodinville and go move boxes around and put product away in their warehouse. And really started to form a relationship with the owner, Jeff, throughout the 6 months, just by coming by once a week. And when I finished the program, at some point I had told him that I had management experience from working at the dining hall when I was in college. And he was like, okay, well, why don't you come work for me for a bit when you're out of the program? And I kind of jumped on board with that. You know, it was the first job offer that came my way, and I was already familiar with the place and with the guys. Like, sure, let's do this. At least it'll fill the gap until I find something better, you know. And got an apartment at that point with a couple of the other recent graduates from the Damascus House as well. Yeah, he, I think within a few months, he promoted me to manager of the whole warehouse. There was a void to fill there. But it wasn't long after I become manager that, that I fell back and had a relapse, and he, Jeff handled that. Jeff, my employer, handled that in a different way than, anybody else in my life had handled it before. Hmm. He graciously took me to detox himself.
Oh, wow.
I think he may have paid for it that time too. And just told me it was going to be okay. You know, he was looking forward to when I was getting out. Accepted me back as soon as I was done in treatment.
Wow.
And I think at that point he had told me that his dad, when he was growing up, was an alcoholic, and so he really just had a heart for people in a similar situation that were looking to turn their lives around.
And yeah.
So Jeff has been a monumental piece of my recovery story, just mm-hmm. In the grace and mercy that he shows me. He's a believer as well, going to Woodinville Alliance.
Yeah, oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I think he has really just been a picture of what Christ's love looks like displayed out for another person. Mm-hmm. So that's been big.
Well, yeah, that's huge. When you relapsed, what was like going on in your life? And what did that look like kind of pre like wet relapse through like having a relapse?
So at that point, like I said, I was living with a couple other grads from the D House, Damascus House, and we had kind of gone into our living situation without a whole lot of conversation on like what kind of structure we wanted. I think we all went into it with our own thought, and so one of the other guys kind of started smoking weed almost immediately, and that wasn't his drug of choice, so he was like, well, it's fine. And we were all kind of doing our own thing. And so it didn't take long for me to fall back into old habits.
Gotcha.
I would get called out in the home, you know, if I started drinking too much. And it just turned out to not be a very healthy environment like we had thought initially.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because it seems like, you know, again, it was a really healthy place when you guys were in the house.
Right.
Was it just the lack of intentionality going in, you think, that kind of didn't set you up for success there, or was it?
I think it was the intentionality, and both of these guys were not like great friends of mine when I was in the house.
Yeah.
They were, a lot of the guys that I really bonded with were from out of state and ended up going back home. And so these were a couple of guys that also were looking for a place, and people that I didn't get to know real well.
Gotcha.
Before moving in together.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So you go through detox again, and Jeff kind of holds your hand through it. It sounds like, what happens next?
Next is, come back to work, kind of rally my guys that I'm in charge of now and just explain, you know, what's going on, and, thank them for covering for me while I was out. And, I told him like, look, I don't ever want to like hide anything from you guys. Like I want to tell you exactly what's going on. Like, I had been drinking for a little bit, before heading back to detox. You know, I wasn't drinking at work or anything, but, if you guys ever like are suspicious of anything, like I want you guys to question me or hold me accountable. And they appreciated that. And we're thankful that I was back, and kind of just went back to work. And this actually ended up happening a couple times. The last one was in December, this last December. Of
the 2021.
2021.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff has kind of held my hand through every time, and recently, took me out to lunch a little while ago and just basically told me, like, look, like, I think you are worth the fight. Like,
sweet
man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's Jesus-y.
Yeah. That's incredibly Jesus-y.
Yes. Yes, it is. So I'm very appreciative of him and what he has provided for me there, and just the grace that he has continually shown me. Yeah. But it was after my last detox run there in December. I was just thinking back on this and remembering this the other day. Like, for whatever reason, within a day of coming out, I was in my car. I had just purchased alcohol again, and I was driving down the road like, what am I doing? Like, I do not want to do this again. And literally, like, tears just started, like, coming. Like, like, I've done this for years now, on and off, where, like, I go out, do my thing, like, regret it, and, like, really mess my life up. It's almost like step forward, two steps back every time, you know? And so that was just, like, dawning on me again, like, a moment of clarity.
Praise God for a moment of clarity.
Yeah,
like that, though.
Yeah.
Normally those happen after the act. I feel like, you know, after a decision's been made. But to have, like, for God to give you a moment to see what was going on before, you know, the door opened, basically.
Right.
Because that's grace.
Yeah. A lot of times, like, if a moment of clarity were coming, like, I would do my best to ignore,
shut it down.
Like somebody's name would come to mind, like, hey, you can give them a call, like they say in AA all the time, you know, reach out. And it's just like, what are they going to tell me? Not to drink? Well, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, like, so anyway, I'm driving down the road with this alcohol that I just purchased, just bawling my eyes out, and literally just, like, shouting at God, like, if you are real, if you are who you say you are, like, I need you right now. I need you to prove that you are enough. I need you to prove that you are sufficient. And, chuck the freaking alcohol out the window and just went home. And that's the first time I had ever done that.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know what? Like, I'm going to try this. Like, I've spent all this time in God's word, and, like, getting to know him, and I don't know that there's ever in my life really been a point where, like, I've truly, relied on him to be who he says he is, especially through my addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been 155 days now, and I have not had, a desire to drink, since then.
Wow. Man.
This is the longest that I've been sober, on my own, without the assistance of, rehab facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is something about turning to God and repenting, literally turning around from my way toward him, and submitting myself on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I've got two questions, but one goes back in time. Like, when did you start being a part of a community outside of Damascus House, a broader church community?
Broader church.
And what, like, got you into a church community?
So the Damascus House, being part of Canyon Hills, while I was in the Damascus House, I was going there every Sunday.
Oh, okay.
And involved in some weekly groups that they had going on, and I liked that. I mean, I felt like I started to get connected a little bit, so I continued that, and still do go to Canyon Hills at least a couple times a month, and really appreciate just their teaching. You know, they are a Bible preaching church. Appreciate the pastors, and just a lot of individuals and families that came alongside the guys in the Damascus House that have a heart for the ministry.
Cool.
And I still connect with them regularly. Mm-hmm. But then it was also getting introduced to Imprint here, I think by my brother initially. He was really encouraging me to get plugged in and get connected in as many ways as possible. Not only for helping my sobriety, but also helping me build my circle of friends to have fellowship with. And I think he found that monumental in his own life.
Yeah, yeah.
And really felt like he could connect here. And you know, whenever one of us does one thing, the other typically will follow. And so, started coming around to Imprint. And today, I kind of go back and forth between Canyon and Imprint still, a little bit, but getting also plugged into the Practicum group.
It was fun to have you.
The first one, the racial, one that you did. And then, the second one, the story scripture.
Yep.
And I like it here. I mean, this is definitely a smaller congregation than Canyon Hills. Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of benefits to that. Like, sure. I get to know people that I don't just see once or twice,
You
know, a month. Like, I see them on Sunday, and then I see them midweek, and we actually have time to have a conversation. And also seeing, you know, my old youth pastor, Bennett Izzard.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's cool.
Who ended up baptizing me.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I didn't know he was your youth pastor.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a trip.
Yeah. And my Practicum, you know, group leader here. And so, a lot of good things. Oh, cool, man.
That's amazing. So let me ask, you know, you're at this point, you've chucked the bottle out the window. You are saying, like, Lord, I want you to be enough, and I want to rely on you. What does that look like? What is that? Because I think that's something that, you know, is in a lot of worship songs, that kind of thing. Like, I want to rely on you, that kind of thing. What did that mean for you, in that moment? What has that meant for you in the past months?
I think initially what that meant for me was going into an unknown area where I felt the overwhelming pull from alcohol or substances, and just like not doing anything about it, not seeking out help, just going with what I always did before.
Yeah.
I think initially that meant that I was going to do something that I was uncomfortable with, and that was just seek him and ask for his help and have faith that he was going to deliver me from those temptations.
And
he did in that moment. Yeah. Even though I haven't had like that overwhelming desire that I used to have since then, I still have like fleeting thoughts of drinking.
Yeah.
Like, especially when the sun came out a few days ago, like
it's just a rhythm at this point.
Yeah,
it's
rhythm, like memories of, you know, drinking on the beach and whatever. And I'm able to, within a fairly short period of time, surrender those thoughts to him. Identify that, you know, that's not who I am anymore. That's not who I want to be. I am called to walk in the newness of life.
Yeah.
And you know, when I'm tempted, giving those thoughts up to him and and combating temptation.
Mm-hmm. Then
also reaching out to other guys, whether that's like brothers that I've met in the Damascus house, but not just being like a solo island out there floating.
Yeah.
Just the people that I have grown in community with and put around myself in my life, like reaching out to them and letting them know.
Yeah.
Like, even if it seems small and insignificant to me, like, these are some thoughts that I had today. Just want to share that with you.
Yeah,
so that they're not just stuck in my own head.
Yeah, you're sharing like who you really are, and experiencing acceptance, and not getting stuck in your head.
Right.
Yeah.
Rad.
Yeah. What did, it sounds like just from the very beginning, you know, we mentioned like Awana's way, that was like the beginning of the conversation, that kind of thing, but it sounds like, and then in the house, that kind of thing, scripture has been part of your life for a while, like Bible and Bible study. Have you noticed a change to the way that you read the Bible in the past several months since that moment, or the way that you even interact with it, or what it's done with your relationship with God?
About a year ago, my mom bought me a chronological Bible. Hmm. And so I've been going through it that way. And I haven't spent as much time memorizing scripture lately. But just kind of wanted to go at it from a different perspective. Whereas I think most of my life, especially in Awana, you know, picking out specific verses to memorize and to lock into my mind, was beneficial.
Totally.
And I can call back on those, at certain points, throughout my life or throughout the day even. But getting a full, scope on the whole overarching, you know, story, like I've never gone through the entire Bible before. And so, doing it a little bit differently now, we're going, you know, through the Old Testament and then the New, just to kind of take a look at how everything points back to Christ and bringing us all back to Him.
Man, that's a game changer for sure.
Yeah. I notice that in stories of addiction, there's a lot of parallels, regardless of substance or activity. Do you have anything that might be helpful for somebody that is stuck in a pattern or is working towards recovery that you'd encourage them with? Or
who's listening to this and just went and bought a bottle and is driving home or something, you know?
Yeah, like an encouragement or a warning or anything you'd want to like speak to them?
Yeah, I think I would say you're not alone. The things that you are thinking or experiencing are not necessarily unique. There are a lot of other people out there who struggle with things very similar to you, even if it's not your same exact story. I would say that I myself am open for phone calls or texts.
Sweet.
People can hit me up, and I may not have all of the advice, but I've definitely walked a very hard road for a long time, and kind of know some things that work and some things that don't. I would also say that that God is there, right there with you, listening, whether you can feel Him or not, and you can reach out and talk to Him. Mm. It's never too late to turn back and repent and to ask for Him to guide you.
That's awesome. Well, Dan, we should probably start wrapping down. Let me ask you though, like, what are you excited about right now? What are you feeling passionate about right now? And, what are you seeing God do around you right now?
I am excited about where, my relationships are at with those close to me, specifically, my family members and Lauren. I've just seen over the past couple of years, as God has brought all of us through my journey specifically, He's really brought each of us closer together in a way that we haven't been before with him at the focal point.
Man.
And so just looking forward to all of those relationships continuing to blossom and grow. And on a separate note, now that I do not have substance issues in my life currently, I've been filling that hole in part with getting back into old activities.
Cool.
And really getting back into exercise and hiking and just in time for the summer too.
That's so awesome, man.
Where's your next hiking spot? Do you have one picked out?
I don't have the next one picked out yet, but Aaron and I are getting my dad back into backpacking
summer. That's awesome.
So we've already picked a date, a weekend that we're going to go away with our two cousins and our uncle and just make a group deal of it. Doing something that we all really enjoy and haven't done together in a while.
That's great, man. Well, this is a great, beautiful place to experience, you know, the beauty of God's creation where we live.
And definitely.
When all the snow melts, you know, in October, then we can enjoy the high country as well. But, yeah. Well, Dan, seriously, thanks for coming on here. Thanks for being vulnerable. I really hope your vulnerability helps someone who's listening here understand what you just said, that they're not alone and that God is with them, whether they think he is or not, and that he cares whether they think he does or not. Man, we'll be praying for you as you move forward. But yeah, seriously, thank you for sharing. Thanks for opening up.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Thank you guys.
Yeah, you got it.
Thanks, man.
We'll be back next week. It'll be with something a little bit different. But seriously, if you want to share your story with us, if you want to share your story with the church, reach out to us. It's podcast@imprintchurch.org. Feel free to also, you can send us some encouragement on to Dan if you want to say something, just let them know you're praying, that kind of thing. We will pass that on. podcast@imprintchurch.org. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.